This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442, for the Canadian office and offices overseas. Listed at the end of the message, please, to visit our websites. They are cbcg.org and biblicaltruthministries.org. And greetings, brethren. This is a special sermon we're given today on whether to eat out in restaurants or not. So this special sermon is going to be for understanding from the Scriptures what we should do, how we should keep the Sabbath in this age, and look at it all through the Bible, because there is quite a number of people who say that you should not eat out on the Sabbath, and they have their various reasons and their excuses for it and various scriptures that they quote from it. So we're going to analyze all of that. We're going to look at it in each case. We're going to see what the purpose of the Sabbath is and so forth. Now, let's first of all begin in the beginning, and we know that God created the Sabbath, and we know that on the seventh day, and that means by the end of the sixth day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, and sanctified means holy, for a holy purpose, and rested in that, because in that he rested from all his work which God created and made. Now, let's come to Exodus 20, and let's review it here. Exodus 20 and verse 6, and the Sabbath commandment here. And then we will come and look at some other scriptures in a little bit. Verse 8, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, because it was holy from the time of creation, because that's when God made it holy, and that's what to sanctify means. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that's within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Just one comment we need to make here is that manservants and maidservants were your personal property slaves. So we'll distinguish that a little bit later as we go along. But I want to ask a question while we go to Deuteronomy 5. How many of you own slaves today? You know, they did during the New Testament time when the church was beginning, but how many own slaves today? That is human slaves. Now, you may have a lot of mechanical slaves. So, you see, things start getting complicated when you start looking at things at the end time here. Now, let's come over here to Deuteronomy 5 and verse 12. Keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your manservant, nor your maidservant, nor your ox, nor your ass, nor your cattle, nor your stranger that is within your gates, that your manservant and maidservant may rest as well as you. And remember that you was a servant. Now that's a slave. In each case, this should read slave. Your manslave or your maidslave and so forth. You were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there through a mighty hand and a stretched out arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. Now we all know those commands, so I wanted to read those so we can understand them. Now, let's come back here to Exodus 16 and let's look at some things that are here. And as we read it, then we're going to go ahead and we're going to analyze it. And we're going to see how these circumstances apply. Now, they were to gather a certain amount every day, and on the sixth day they were to gather twice as much. So let's pick it up here in verse 22, Exodus 16, because this is one of the scriptures where it is staunchly used that you cannot eat out on the Sabbath. So So let's see what it says. Let's look at the circumstances involved. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said to them, this is what the Lord has said, tomorrow is the rest of the Sabbath unto you. Bake that which you will bake today, seed that which you seed, and that which remains over, lay up for you, and keep it until the morning. And they laid it up and kept it to the morning, as Moses bade them, and it did not stink, and neither did it breed worms. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is the Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find any in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, there shall be none in it. Now, let's read on a little bit and see what happened. And it came to pass that there were some of the people that went out on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long refuse you to keep my commandments and my law? See, for that the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he has given you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Abide every man in his place, and let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. Now let's look at the situation here. Where were they? Well, they were in the wilderness of Sinai, right? Yes, indeed. They had to live in their tents, didn't they? Yes. They had no Bibles. They had nothing to study. And all the work and labor of walking certainly would be very exhausting. So their rest on the Sabbath was such as what? As this. No man go out of his place on the Sabbath. Now, if you strictly apply this today, it means that if you're going to strictly go by Exodus 16, you must not even go out of the door of your house on the Sabbath. Now, is that what God wants today in the New Testament church? For you to just stay home? Now, there's some people, they have no alternative because there's no place for them to fellowship. No brethren to fellowship with. And a lot of them wish they had brethren to fellowship with. But the circumstances here are totally different than we have today, aren't they? Here's the whole nation. Everyone was to keep the Sabbath. Everyone was to keep the holy days. Now we're going to see that in a closed community such as this, you are not going to have the problems that we have today, which we'll cover a little later on, and so we can understand what we need to do today. Now, let's come here to Exodus 35, since we're here in the book of Exodus. And here's another one that the Jews have taken. A little later we're going to read from the book, The Code of Jewish Law, in case you don't have it. I'll give the information on how you can get it. But this is a book on splitting hairs and ridiculous laws. And those who are so stringent in what they are doing, sooner or later, they're going to paint themselves into a corner that they can't get out of, and they're going to have to end up being like the scribes and Pharisees. And of all the papers sent to me, every single one of them had to do with mostly Old Testament scriptures. Now, there's nothing wrong with the Old Testament scriptures, but we need to understand something concerning the Old Testament scriptures as we go along. There were a few New Testament scriptures, but one of the key important scriptures, which gives us an understanding of what God will give us the opportunity to do when there is need, is not even covered, not even analyzed in every single paper. And in dealing with some people, they really and truly advocate just staying at home. And you need to think about that. Now, if it's necessary, well, that's fine. Now, let's read here, Exodus 35, and verse 1. And the Lord gathered all the congregation of the children of Israel together, and said unto them, these are the words which the Lord commanded that you should do them. 6 days shall work be done. On the seventh day, there shall be a holy day, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. Whosoever does any work therein shall be put to death. You shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations on the Sabbath day. Now, to kindle a fire, back then, in the camp, and everything to do that was a completely different proposition than we have today, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. So kindling a fire, the Jews have gone to great extremes to not kindle any fire. And we'll see that when we read part of the Code of Jewish Law. Now this was not, as some people say, having to do with furnaces that they had for melting the gold and silver and fashioning all the things for the temple. Now that is included in it, but he talks to the whole congregation, every one of them. So the only way they could have warmth on the Sabbath was to have a fire and have it going, and then they could put wood on it to keep themselves warm. And we'll see a little later on that the Jews today do not even allow that. So we're looking at some different things here. Now we also know that in Exodus 12:16, it says on the holy day that the work may be done for what is necessary for every man's eating. That can be done. Whatever is necessary to do it, that is perfectly allowable on the holy day, though they are Sabbaths. Now, let's talk about servile work for just a minute. Servile work has to do with those who were slaves. They would serve you. Servile work has to do with working for anyone. So what it says there, you shall do no servile work in relationship to the Sabbath and Holy Day and Day of Atonement and the other Sabbaths, that has to do with that kind of work and labor. Now, let's understand something that is also important. When they came into the land, they conquered the land, and it was a nation of Sabbath and Holy Day keepers. When you have a nation or community or city where everyone keeps the Sabbath, you're not going to be confronted with the problems that we have today. An entirely different proposition. Do you know of a single city or community or village that is a Sabbath-keeping community? Well, there may be some with the Jews in Palestine. But I don't know of any. There used to be one in Southern California, Loma Vista, because that was headquarters for many Seventh-day Adventists. And what happened was they ended up closing almost everything down on the Sabbath day, because there were many Seventh-day Adventist churches right there, and they could all either quick drive or walk to church. And even the post office closed on Saturday and was open on Sunday. Now, of the Churches of God, do you know any circumstances that fit that? No, I can't think of a one. Let's come to Nehemiah 13, and here's another scripture that is used to show that today we should not eat out. Today we are forbidden to buy and sell. Let's see what it says. Let's think again about the circumstances and ask ourselves the question, are we in the same circumstances that they have here? And then we'll look at some things in the New Testament, and we will see some different things, which, when we understand it, you would probably categorize as worse than Sabbath breaking. Of course, there are many ways you can break the Sabbath, but we won't get into all of that. Now, let's come here, Nehemiah, the 13th chapter, and let's pick it up here in verse 10, or verse 7. Nehemiah 13 and verse 7. And I came to Jerusalem and understand of the evil of Eliashib for Tobiah, did for Tobiah in preparing a chamber in the courts of the house of God. So here they were already desecrating the temple after they got back out of the Babylonian captivity. And Nehemiah writes, "And it grieved me sore, therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I commanded that they cleanse the chambers and brought out again the vessels of the house of the Lord with the meal offering or the grain offering and frankincense." So here they weren't even offering any of the offerings of God again. "And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given to them." So they weren't tithing. They weren't giving what they needed to give. "And the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled, everyone to his field." They had to go out and work for themselves now. "Then contended I with the rulers and said, why is the house of God forsaken? And I gathered them together and set them in their place, then brought all Judah, the tithe of the corn, the new wine, and the oil, into the treasuries. And I made treasurers over the treasuries," and then he listed all of them. Said, "Remember your office to do it." Now, verse 14. "Remember me, O God, concerning this, and wipe not out my good deeds that I have done for the house of God and for the offices thereof." Now, verse 15. "And in those days I saw in Judah some treading wine presses." I want you to think about what was going on here. Now, wine presses, you get in, you stomp with your feet on the Sabbath, bringing in sheaves, lading asses, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manners of burden, which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals, and there dwelt men of Tyre, and they brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah in Jerusalem. Then I contended with the nobles of Judah, and said unto them, what evil is this that you do, and you profane the Sabbath day? Did not our fathers thus? And did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet you bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. Now, let's look at what he had to do. And let's understand, this was to be what? The city of Jerusalem and the province of Judea was to be what? A Sabbath-keeping nation, right? Yes. Now, how big was Jerusalem? Very small. You could walk across it on a Sabbath day's journey, which is three-eighths of a mile. I believe that's what I have heard what a Sabbath day journey is. Now, if we went strictly by what the Jews believe on a Sabbath day journey, we'd all be out of luck for attending Sabbath services, I do believe. So, here's what he did. Verse 19. "And it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut, and charged that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And some of the servants of my servants, so he set guards." Now, he had to employ guards to watch the gates, "that there should be no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. So the merchants and sellers of all kinds of ware lodged outside Jerusalem once or twice, that is, once or twice more, and didn't come any. Then I testified against them and said to them, why do you lodge about the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you. And he did. He took some of them, pulled them by their beards, and smacked them in the face for the things that they were doing. From that time forth, they came no more on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves, that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath. Then he says, remember me, O God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of your mercy. Now, let's analyze this and look at all the factors. They were living in a closed community. Everyone was required to keep the Sabbath. As I mentioned before, do any of us live in a closed community today? No, we do not. Now, let's talk about within your gates. Within your gates then was applied to the gates of the nation and the gates of the city. But within your gates today applies to your household. Do you own your neighbor's house next door? Is he part of your gate? Do you have any influence over him, whether he keeps his Sabbath or not? No, you don't. See, today, with the church scattered, we're in an entirely different situation, and the circumstances are entirely different. We need to understand that. Now, we're going to look at some of the things in the New Testament. Let's look at some of these. Let's see the ministry of Jesus. And with the ministry of Jesus, we see something that began to change. And this becomes important for us to understand and realize. Now, there were many, many synagogues throughout the area of Jerusalem and Judea and Galilee, as we will see. And Jesus traveled to all of these synagogues. Now, that normally wasn't done. So there was a lot of traveling that Jesus did. Now, Matthew, the fourth chapter, and let's see about the ministry that Jesus had and how far he went and the things that took place and the people came to him. Matthew 4 and verse 23. And Jesus went throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues. Now you teach in the synagogues on the Sabbath. And we also know that in Luke 4 that he came to the synagogue and stood up and to read. So there were synagogues within walking distance all throughout the area of Judea and Jerusalem and Galilee. Now, that's in addition to the temple. Now, we'll talk about the temple and something that went on there a little later. And preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing every disease and every bodily ailment, and his fame went out into all Syria. They brought to him all that were sick, oppressed by diseases, tormented and possessed of demons and lunatics and paralytics, and he healed them all. And great multitudes followed him from Galilee, Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and beyond Jordan. So this was a tremendous thing that Jesus was doing. And when he would come to the synagogues, many times they would be jammed with people. Now let's look at an attitude here of those who didn't like Jesus teaching on the Sabbath. Let's come to Mark, the third chapter, and let's see what happened here. Mark, the third chapter. And in this, Jesus is showing that many of the laws and many of the circumstances that the Jews had invented and put on the Sabbath, he was doing away with. Now, let's begin here in Mark 3 and verse 1. And again, he went into the synagogue, and a man who had a withered hand was there. And they were watching him to see if he would heal on the Sabbath in order that they might accuse him. And, of course, another place said, he was even told, you know, don't you people come here to be healed on the Sabbath. You come on any other day. Well, you see, they forgot the aspect of mercy, of forgiveness, of grace, of love. And there is one thing that is definitely lacking in the writings of those who declare that you should not go out and eat on the Sabbath. It is certainly a very poor judgment, and it's certainly very condemning, and very little love, very little understanding of the circumstances in the days in which we're living. And we'll talk about that a little later when we get to it. Now, verse 3, then he said to the man who had the withered hand, stand here in the center. And he said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or to do evil? Now, that's a pertinent question, because as we will see later, there were many things that the Jews forbade to be done. Now, they couldn't answer him, so he asked the next question: to save life or to kill? And they were silent. And after looking around at them with anger, being grieved at the hardness of their heart, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and the hand was restored as sound as the other. So there you have quite a situation there with it. Now, then Jesus left, and he went to another place. Now, let's come to John, the fifth chapter. John, the fifth chapter, and let's see about another healing that Jesus did on the Sabbath day. Now, here we are in John, the fifth chapter. And this is where Jesus healed a man who had an infirmity for 38 years. Now, this was also a feast day in addition. And he was down there by the pool, and an angel would come and agitate the water, and the first one in would be healed. So Jesus came, and he said, "Do you desire to be made whole?" Now, verse 7, "And the infirm man answered and said, 'Sir, I do not have anyone to put me in the pool after the water has been agitated, but as I'm going, another steps down before me.' And Jesus said, 'Arise, take up your bedroll and walk.'" Now, this was about the size of a sleeping bag. Now, the Jews made it impossible to carry anything on the Sabbath. In order to keep people from carrying burdens, they had to sit down and argue, what could you carry, what could you handle, what was permissible, what was not permissible. And so the Jews said, this is breaking the Sabbath. So he was made whole, took up his bedroll, and walked, and it was the Sabbath. This reason, the Jews said to the man that has been healed, "It is the Sabbath day, it's not lawful for you to take your bedroll." Now, we're going to see there are a lot of things that they invented where it's not lawful to take anything. And he answered and said, "The one who made me whole said to me, 'Take up your bedroll and walk.' And they said to him, 'Who is the one who said to you, take up your bedroll and walk?' But the man who had been healed didn't know who it was, for Jesus had moved away. And then after these things, Jesus found him in the temple and said, 'Behold, you've been made whole. Sin no more, so that something worse does not happen to you.' And he went and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him whole. And for this cause, the Jews persecuted him and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. So Jesus answered and said to them, 'My Father is working until now, and I work.'" Now, there's work to be done on the Sabbath. And there's also work that God is doing. And this is why the Jews wanted to kill him, all the more because he had loosed the Sabbath, and also because he had called God his Father, making himself equal with God. Let's ask a question. In keeping the universe going, does God on the Sabbath shut down the sun because it's a great fire? No, he does not. Or the moon? No, the earth still keeps going. That's all a part of what God is doing in working on the Sabbath. Though it is set in motion and kept by the laws that he has created, he's upholding all of it by the word of his power. So that's still going. And there are things, you know, the works of the body. You have to breathe, you have to bathe, you have to eliminate. All of those things are part of the physical works of the body. So there are works that are done on the Sabbath day, which are not work for labor, work for money, or doing your own pleasure, or doing your own business. So we need to also understand that. Now, let's look at something which you might consider worse than Sabbath breaking, which was permissible in the New Testament church. Now let's come to 1 Corinthians, the 8th chapter. Now, 1 Corinthians 8. This has to do with eating food sacrificed to idols. And it was allowable to eat. It was also allowable to go into the idol temple and sit down and eat in the little restaurant connected with the temple. Now, these are believers who used to worship at the temple. So let's read it here. Now, concerning things sacrificed to idols, we know that all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. And that's what God wants. We're going to see that mercy triumphs over judgment. And Jesus wants mercy and not sacrifice. We'll see that in just a little bit. But what I'm going to point out here is how this is something that was allowed. Verse 2, but if anyone thinks he knows anything, he knows nothing yet to the degree that he ought to know. And this is true in everything that we do. And true in every judgment that we make. Is that not so? Yes. But if anyone loves God, he's known of him. Now this is a very important thing to understand. Because we need to love God with all our hearts and mind and soul and being. And we need to love our neighbors as ourselves. And we need to love the brethren as Christ has loved us. And if you're strapped down at home, how are you ever going to learn, because you're afraid to go out on the Sabbath, how are you ever going to learn to love the brethren? Now you just think on that. So then, concerning things, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we understand that an idol in the world is nothing, and that there's no other God except one. So we can look at an idol and say, hey, that's nothing. Now you think about it. This, to me, is worse than eating out on the Sabbath. But yet, it was allowed. Let's go on. Paul says, for indeed, even if there are those which are called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as there are many gods and lords, still to us there is one God the Father, of whom are all things, and we are in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we are by him. However, not all have this knowledge, but some, with conscience of the idol, now until now, eat it as a thing sacrificed to an idol, and their weak conscience is being defiled. And so there's a thing concerning weak brethren. So it says, if anyone sees you eating in the idol temple, sitting there eating, will not his weak conscience be emboldened so as to cause him to eat things sacrificed to idols? See, if you know an idol is nothing, it is nothing. And it doesn't matter if the clean foods that they sacrificed there at the temple were sacrificed to an idol. The idol doesn't pollute it. That doesn't change it. It's still just food. So then he says, if this causes problems, he wouldn't offend. He would not do it. All right. Now, let's come back here and see something else. Let's see where probably this principle was taken from. Let's come to Mark the fourth chapter, or second chapter rather. Mark the second chapter. And let's look at the circumstances that we have here, and let's see what we are dealing with, and let's see what took place. Now we've got parallel accounts in Matthew 12 and in Luke 6. So we'll cover all three of those. Now, Mark 2 and verse 23. And it came to pass that he went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. So now here he is traveling, he's walking, journeying. And as his disciples made their way through the grain fields, they were picking and eating the grain. Now, it distinctly tells us that we are not to harvest. we are not to harvest on the Sabbath day. Now hold your place here, and Exodus 34, and let's see where it tells us. They were not to harvest on the Sabbath at all. And furthermore, in his walking, he was probably walking further than a Sabbath day's journey. Now, if you're only going from your home to the synagogue, there's no reason to walk through the grain field and pick something up to eat, because you probably have already eaten before you left. Now, this happened on the Sabbath day. All right, let's read it. Exodus 34 and verse 21. 6 days shall you work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In earing time and in harvest you shall rest. So this, plucking it, now it probably was not a great deal that they were picking, but it certainly was more than just a casual ear of green grain that they were picking. And so this would constitute harvesting. Where do you say you're not harvesting? How do you figure it out? What if you pull a carrot out of the ground on the Sabbath? Have you harvested? Well, maybe not. How about if you pull two, or three, or four, or five, or six? Where do you draw the line? See? Then the Pharisees said to him, "Look at them. Why are they doing that which is not lawful on the Sabbath day?" Is not lawful. I just read it to you. They were not to do it. Now that's important to understand, and I think this is the very principle right here in Mark the second chapter that Paul used to write about things sacrificed to idols. That's why I wanted to go there, to show you now here's something that perhaps is even worse than eating out on the Sabbath. So let's read this whole account here. We're going to think about it. We're going to analyze it. We're going to see what was transpiring here. And he said to them, "Did you never read what David did when he was hungry and in need of food and those with him? How in the days of Abiathar the high priest he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priest, and he gave it to those who were with him." Now that's against the law. So there are some things that are against the law in the Old Testament when it comes to the New Testament are not against the law. Now, why did Jesus say this? And this is important for us also to understand. Now read verse 27. He said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." Now let's understand everything that's going on here and see what was taking place. Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, said by what they were doing here, that in plucking the grain, they were not sinning, though the Old Testament says it is a sin. Why? Because they had need, and they were hungry, and they were journeying. Now also, they were journeying on the Sabbath. Now let's look at it this way. Were they carrying knapsacks with sandwiches? No. Doesn't say that they were. They certainly weren't carrying coolers with ice in them, with their food in it, were they? No. They were walking. So they were journeying. And there was need to eat. So Jesus gave them permission to eat, though it was not lawful because he's Lord of the Sabbath. So this needs to be put in exactly the same category as we find in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 concerning the spirit of the law. Does it not? How he magnified the law? Yes. Now, let's see another explanation of it here. Let's come to Luke, the sixth chapter, and let's read it again here, the same account, and then we'll come to Matthew, the 12th chapter. "And it came to pass on the second Sabbath of the first rank that he was walking through the grain fields. So he was leading the way. And his disciples were plucking ears and eating them after rubbing them with their hands. Now that's also, that is winnowing, isn't it? You shall not harvest, you shall not winnow. Wow, great sinners. But some of the Pharisees said to them, why are you doing that which is not lawful on the Sabbath? And Jesus answered and said to them, have you not even read this, that which David did when he hungered and those who were with him? He went into the house of God, took the loaves of showbread and ate them, and gave some, and also gave some to those with him, which is not lawful to eat except for the priest only. And he said to them, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So here he is legislating by example using his personal authority. Now, let's read Matthew 12. Let's see the account here, because this is interesting, because he was on his way to the synagogue. They were walking to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and apparently came from quite a ways, so they were hungry. Now, Matthew 12 and verse 1, at that time Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath day, and it's important to understand, not just his disciples, he was. And his disciples were hungry. They began to pluck the heads of grain to eat them. And it tells what the Pharisee said. It's not lawful. Then he gives about verse 3 and 4 about David and those with him. Now verse 5. Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priest in the temple profaned the Sabbath and are guiltless? And yes, it was by God's command that they did it, right? To offer the sacrifices, to do the things that were necessary on the Sabbath, yes. But I say to you, there is one here who is greater than the temple. Now, if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would have not condemned the guiltless. So there was no guilt in it. There was no sin in it. There was nothing wrong in what they did. Now that becomes important for us, as we'll see a little later, because when we go for Sabbath services, we have to travel. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath day. Now I'm going to read from the Code of Jewish Law. I'm going to read some of the laws that were designed by the Jews who are Pharisees. And remember, you can just put in your notes there, Matthew 23, about the burdens that they laid on people. And what happened? They made the Sabbath a curse because of all the things that they legislated in addition to it. Now, let's talk about igniting here. It is forbidden to do work that requires concentration before a lamp. Now that's a little, we've covered that before, one of those little lamps with a wick in it and oil. The rabbis have forbidden this, lest someone forgets and tilts the lamp in order to bring the oil closer to the wick, and then one would be guilty of igniting. Two persons, however, may read one subject out of one book, because if one will attempt to tilt it, the other will remind him. Now, well, we're going to get some good laughs out of some of these, because you see, this is the ridiculous things that get into legislating for every little act that you do on the Sabbath. Now, there are hundreds of laws concerning the Sabbath here. It is, however, permissible, the prevailing custom to permit reading before the light of our modern candles, in which the tallow or the wax firmly sticks to the wick. Well, thank you. How about with electric lights? Yes, we have, but that's still igniting, isn't it? But one must make a certain mark so as to remember not to snuff off the wick. According to the view of Maimonides, the last name act is a violation of Mosaic law. It is impermissible to snuff off the wick even through a non-Jew. Let's fast forward this tape and turn it to the other side, please. Now let's talk about igniting a little bit more. The Jews today will not strike a match, because that's igniting. Now we'll talk a little bit more about igniting this way. Every time you turn on a light, you ignite. Every time you turn on a gas stove, you ignite. Or an electric stove, you ignite somewhere down the line, don't you? Yes, indeed. Now, we'll talk about having people wait on you and serve you on the Sabbath and so forth, because there are a lot of people waiting on you and serving you on the Sabbath that you don't even consider, and they are being paid. Now, let's go on. Let's read a little bit more here. It is forbidden to open a door or window opposite a burning candle, lest the flame be extinguished. But one may close the window or the door. It is forbidden to open or close the door of an oven in which a fire is burning, for by doing so, one either increases or decreases the fire. Now, according to this, you couldn't drive your car on the Sabbath, because when you step on the accelerator, you're increasing the number of times that the pistons are igniting. Now, think about that for a minute. Then it talks about another one here. You can't pour boiling gravy on pieces of bread or matzah. That's forbidden. But you can pour the gravy in a dish, let it cool, and then put the bread in, then you can eat it. It is forbidden to place fruit or water upon a hot stove, because the water might boil and the fruit might bake. How about that? Even if we intend only to warm it, nevertheless, since it is possible that on this spot it may boil or break, it's forbidden to warm it. See, you have to eat everything cold. How about that? Let's read another one. On the Sabbath, it's forbidden to store away victuals in any wrappings, even if it would not increase its warmth. Therefore, if we remove a pot containing victuals which have been cooked or heated in it, we are forbidden to wrap it or cover it with pillows, bolsters, or the like in order to preserve its warmth. Have a lovely cold Sabbath, folks. On the Sabbath, it's forbidden to take honey out of a honey hive, or beehive, rather. It is likewise forbidden to crush honeycombs, even though they have been removed from the hive on Friday. Now, you see, that's exerting a lot of work to crush honeycombs. Thus, if the honeycombs have not been crushed for the Sabbath, it's forbidden to use the honey that oozes from them on the Sabbath, but it is permissible to take the honey that flows from the hive. Now, I can't figure that out. What do you do? Walk out there and it's dripping and you can take it from the hive? I have no idea. If fruit is spilled from a vessel, whether in a house or in a courtyard, they may not gather it on the Sabbath. If they are in one spot, But if they are scattered, you can gather it on the Sabbath if it's just in one spot. But if they're scattered, then it requires physical exertion to do so that they may not be gathered into a basket, but they may be picked up and eaten one by one. Now, you talk about swallowing an apple. There you go. Now, here's another one. You think about this. It's forbidden to squeeze fruit to make juice, like squeezing lemons into water to make lemonade. Some authorities even permit to suck juice out of the fruit with the mouth. At any rate, eating grapes, one should not suck out the juice and throw away the skins. However, if one has no need for juice to make a drink, one is allowed to squeeze it out. Now, you see? This is what's going to happen with all of those who set down their own Pharisaical laws. It comes to this. A woman is not allowed to squeeze milk from her breast into a vessel to feed her child with, but she's allowed to squeeze out a little milk in order to induce the child to take hold of the breast and suck it. What is the difference? It's forbidden to sprinkle some of her milk for the sake of a remedy in a case where there is such danger or where pain is not intended. Here's another one. It's forbidden to strain any kind of vegetable, for concerning this, there are many conflicting opinions. One is, however, permitted to drink through a cloth, as the law forbidding separation applies only where the food or drink is prepared prior to eating or drinking it. Amazing. Here's another one. If a fly has fallen into beverage or food, we must not remove the fly only, but we should also take some of the food or beverage with it. Here's another one. It's forbidden to cut onions or any other vegetables except immediately before a meal, and even then, they should not be cut into very thin slices. I don't know what's the difference, thin or thick slices. Here's another one. It's forbidden to salt any substance which will be affected by salt in such a way that it becomes soft or less pungent, because that constitutes the violation known as tanning. Do you know you're tanning vegetables? Therefore, it's forbidden to use salt, forbidden to salt raw cucumbers, cabbages, radishes, onions, even if the quantity is limited to that which is needed for an immediate meal. But one may dip each piece in salt before eating it. Now, you figure that. Boiled eggs, meat, and other foods upon which a salt has only the effect of imparting a salty flavor may be salted. Thank you. But only for consumption of the immediate meal, not for another meal. It's forbidden to salt a large quantity of boiled beans or peas together because it tends to make them softer. It's forbidden even if one intends to eat them immediately. Now, think on this. The law forbidding construction also applies to edibles, for instance, making cheese, or arranging fruit in a certain orderly way. Therefore, when making a salad of sliced onions or eggs or the milt of herring, one must be careful not to arrange them systematically, but to put them on the plate randomly. Just throw it in a heap. All right, then it talks about what Jews are forbidden to do on the Sabbath. It is forbidden also to be done through a non-Jew. Nevertheless, an exception. In the wintertime, since it's permissible to make a fire in the stove through a non-Jew. Now think about if you were in Russia, where you have a bitter cold winter, and your fire went out. Now what are you going to do? Sit there and freeze and die because you can't light a fire? You can't ignite it? Since it's permissible to make a fire in the stove through a non-Jew for the purpose of heating a house, the custom prevails that a non-Jew places the cold victuals on the stove before he makes the fire. Now, it's got to be before. Since the intention in making the fire is not to warm the victuals, but to heat the house. But the victuals should not be placed on the stove after it was heated. It is certain, however, that the intention in making the fire is not for the sake of heating the house, but for heating the victuals. It's forbidden. Have a lovely cold Sabbath meal. Let's look at another one. Anyone who spills liquid on the soil where anything is apt to grow is guilty of violating the law against sowing because the liquid accelerates growth. Well, now, what if it rains? A maiden is forbidden to make braids or to take them apart on the Sabbath, but she is allowed to fix her hair with her hands. The hair must not be combed with a brush made of bristles if it is very hard, because it's impossible not to pluck out some hair, so that's harvesting hair on the Sabbath. But if it is not hard, the hair may be set with it, especially if it is made for that particular purpose. Well, the only thing you can do then, ladies, is just take your hair, get up in the morning, go like this, fluff it up, and say, I'm ready for the Sabbath day. Can you imagine that? Okay. Now here's another one. If water spills on a table, it's forbidden to wipe it off with a cloth, which one values, since it absorbs much water, one might wring it out. Neither should one use a cloth in drying glasses or other vessels, having a narrow open, for the liquid might be squeezed out of the cloth. Terrible, terrible, terrible things. I mean, this goes on and on. There are hundreds of laws. If one is caught in the rain and his clothes get wet, he may go home and remove his clothes, but he's not allowed to spread them out so they may dry. Even if one's clothes are only moist with perspiration, he's not allowed to spread them out, certainly not in front of a fire. Even when one has wet clothes on, he's not allowed to stand in front of a fire where it is very hot. One is likewise forbidden to shake off water from a garment, a costly garment of which one takes special care, must not even be handled when taken off for fear he might be wringing the water out of it. Now, this is nonsense. If one walks and reaches a brook, one may jump over it even if it is wide. Jumping is better than the effect of walking around it. One is not permitted to cross it by wading, lest he still wring his clothes after crossing. One must not walk along the sloping bank of a stream for the Sabbath, for he might slip and fall into the water and his clothes get wet and then wring them out. Ghastly, what a terrible thing. See, all of these things are designed to lock you in your house. That's what they are for. Now, God doesn't want us to lock ourselves in the house. All right? Let's read a couple others here. It's forbidden to catch any living thing on the Sabbath, even a flea. But if an insect stings a person, it may be removed and thrown off, but one is not allowed to kill it. Because it's forbidden to kill on the Sabbath anything that possesses life. Well, that's not in the Bible anywhere. It is, however, permissible to kill lice, since they are created only by perspiration. So this tells you how old these laws are. Nevertheless, those found on clothes may not be killed, but should be thrown off. Only those found in the head may be killed. Now, pray tell, what on earth is the difference? Now, here's another one. It's forbidden to draw blood on the Sabbath, even to suck the blood from the gums. Now, you tell me something. If you have pyrrhea and your gums are bleeding, or you just have a tooth that's loose and it's bleeding, how are you going to keep from swallowing the blood? I mean, you can spit it out, but you see, terrible situation that they have here. Likewise, it's forbidden to put a plaster on a wound to draw out blood and pus. So lay there and get infected and get worse, huh? It is certainly forbidden to squeeze blood or pus from a boil. Lay there and suffer. Poor Job. Boy, Job would have been in terrible shape if that would have been in effect in his day. Now here's another one about bathing. One is forbidden to wash his whole body. And I remember when I was down in Australia, I was out there was actually in a Jewish hotel that I was staying in, and they had things all worked out. You could fix your own breakfast and everything there. But I tell you what, it's evident that the Jews did not bathe on the Sabbath because you could smell it. By this law, one is forbidden to wash his whole body or even the greater part of the body in warm water, even if the water was warm before the Sabbath. It is forbidden even if he washes the body a small part at a time. It is forbidden to enter a bathhouse for the purpose of perspiring there. However, it's permissible to wash one's feet and bathe one's wash one's face and bathe one's feet with water made warm before the Sabbath. So you see, what's the difference? Now, let's see if there are any more that I want to read here. There are hundreds of them.
Then it talks about all the prayers and all the things that were to be done through the day, through the Sabbath, and everything like that. Now, let's continue on. See, these are the things that Jesus, in addition to changing the law in the Old Testament, that Jesus was doing here in Mark, the second chapter. Remember, he's Lord of the Sabbath. He made it. He created it. So he, for travel, when it's necessary to eat, they ate, and he said, what? They are guiltless. Now, let's look at some other scriptures. Let's go on and see what else we can uncover and discern here concerning the Sabbath day. Now, let's ask the question, and this is the question we need to ask. What is the purpose of the Sabbath day? Let's see one of them. Let's come here to Hebrews, the 10th chapter. And let's look at some things which are very important for us to understand. Because loving God becomes a very important thing, does it not? We love God, we keep the Sabbath and all of that. We love the brethren, don't we? We have to learn to love them as Jesus loved us. Now, let's read it here in verse 25, Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and we get a very important thing that we need to understand. Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together, even as some are accustomed to do, but rather encouraging one another, that means you're getting together, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Now, we're certainly living in the end times and getting closer to the return of Jesus Christ, would you not say? Yes, indeed. And we need to understand that the paramount thing on the Sabbath is, number one, to worship and fellowship with God, and he fellowships with us. And number two, to worship and fellowship with the brethren whenever we are able to get together. Now, I have something here that I want to go over, and some of the things that have been put out by different ones. Here's one here. Appropriate Sabbath activities. Well, if you know the Bible, they're all appropriate, the things that we know. Rest from your labor, fellowship with God's people, study his word. However, as we saw back there in Exodus 16, they didn't have any word to study. They didn't have anywhere to go. They were all assembled together anyway, weren't they? Yes. Pray to him. Refrain from worry. This is Sabbath test by Art Bradig and a man named Fisher. Meditate on his way, sing praises to him, be nourished by his servants, anticipate his kingdom, celebrate God's way with the family, teach your children, delight in the great hope he's given you, serve God's people, comfort the weak, encourage the strong, embrace the lonely. Well, those are all good things. Now, they are strictly against eating out on the Sabbath anywhere, anytime. And so it presents great problems and difficulties. Now, here he says, seven prohibitions. You shall not acquire food on the Sabbath. Uh-oh, the disciples sinned, didn't they? Didn't they, by plucking the grain? Did they not acquire food on the Sabbath? Yes, they did. You shall not prepare food on the Sabbath. Both of these referring to Exodus 16. Now, let me ask you about preparing food. To prepare food before our modern day meant this, that on Friday, if you're going to have chicken on the Sabbath, you had to get the chicken, you had to wring its neck, you had to take off all the feathers, you had to clean it, you had to cut it, you had to get it all ready, you had to have the fire because you didn't have electricity and you didn't have gas and you cooked it ahead of time, right? And if you had the fire going, you could keep it going, but somehow the Jews had it that you couldn't put wood on it. So you see, they made the Sabbath a burden. Now today, when you prepare, what do you have? Well, you go to the store and most of it's already prepared. You don't go out in the garden and dig up your own carrots. Now, some people have their own gardens. They do that and so forth. But most people, they go to the store, they get their carrots, they get their vegetables, they get their lettuce, they get their fruit, they get their chickens. They can either get them whole, get them cut up, they're all ready to go. Now you bring it home. Now let's talk about something here concerning warming things up on the Sabbath. Now, is there labor to turning on an electric knob for an oven, if you have an electric oven, or to set it with a gas oven? Okay, now let's think about something here, because the argument is given this a little later. The when you go into a restaurant and you order food and you buy it, you are transacting business and you're conducting with business with people not in the world. All right. Or not in the church, rather. All right, they're in the world. Now, when you turn a light on, you're conducting business because your meter is running, isn't it? And you're being charged for that. And you're also hiring someone who sits down there at the main dispensing of electricity, wherever that may be. It may be a substation, it may be a dam, it may be steam turbines, or it may be diesel turbines, whatever. They are there producing the electricity, aren't they? And if you use it and you're paying for it, are you not hiring that person to do it? Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So to take the scriptures from Exodus 16 and apply them today is not correct. Now here's what he says. You shall not go out of your place on the Sabbath day. That is something. So what do? Stay home? Don't visit the brethren? Now, in today's world, that would be impossible. Let's ask another question. Did God inspire Daniel to write, "At the time of the end, many shall go to and fro"? Yes. Did God know we would travel? Yes. Did God know that the church would be scattered at the end? Of course he did. So to assemble, to be together with brethren on the Sabbath, takes a little bit different effort, doesn't it? Now, speaking of hiring and so forth, we'll continue on here. It says, you shall not direct your servant to labor on the Sabbath. Well, none of us own slaves. Now, let's understand something else, too. There's another one I want to read here, which is really very good, and we'll show how that can also be turned in a little different way. All right. So therefore, if you go into a restaurant, you're hiring a servant. Well, do you pay his wage? No, you don't. Now, question: if this were a whole Sabbath-keeping community, there wouldn't be any restaurants open. And if it was a whole Sabbath-keeping community, you could go walk to your church and you could have your meal at home and have people over your house and so forth. No problem. So we can see this. If you keep the Sabbath in your home, there's no need for you to go out. Now, if you desire to eat a meal out in the winter, go before sunset, or go after Sabbath, after sunset, or in the summer, go before sunset in the early evening. All right. You're directed, you shall not direct an unbeliever to work on the Sabbath. Now, think about this for a minute. We live in a world of unbelievers, don't we? Do we direct people to do things on the Sabbath? Or do we have people do things for us on the Sabbath? Are not the policemen there, the highway patrolmen there? Is not the fire department there? Are they not there on the Sabbath? And if you have a fire and if you have an accident, are you not glad that they are there? And will they not bill you for it? Well, let's read a couple of other ones here. see where it is. Okay. I think that's it. You shall not buy or sell on the Sabbath day. All right. What about if there is a need? Now, what I want to do is, here's another one put out by another man. Says, well, what if you went into a restaurant and you ate a lunch there, and the next Sabbath you came back and they had this notice? Notice, this restaurant rejects God's law and profanes his Sabbath. We serve another God. He is our master. So come on in and enjoy the best food and service in town. Well, now, let's think of it this way. Are we in a world that profanes the Sabbath? When you drive to Sabbath services, are you surrounded by people profaning the Sabbath? Yes, you are. See? Let's look at some other things. Let's come here to 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, and let's realize a very important principle. God has not taken us out of the world. We are just not to be of the world. But we still live in the world. And we have all of these things that we are doing today in traveling, in visiting, and we are dependent upon a lot of people who are rejecting God's laws, profaning his Sabbath, and that we depend upon them in order for us to keep the Sabbath. And in every sense of the word, you are hiring someone, whether it be someone at an electrical depot, or a policeman, or a patrolman, or anyone directing traffic. They are there working on the Sabbath, and in the event of emergency, it is good for you. Now, is it possible to travel on the Sabbath? Of course it is. Jesus showed that it was. The disciples were traveling. Is it possible to eat out on the Sabbath when you're traveling? Yes, Jesus showed that it was. Mark the 2nd chapter, didn't he? Now, if you're not traveling, you don't need to eat out. It's just that simple. Now, here's what we are faced with in the world. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. Now, he's talking about the one who committed sin within the church and asked to put him out. And then the question comes out here, verse 9, 1 Corinthians 5, I wrote to you in an epistle not to associate with the sexually immoral. That's within the church. They commit a sin, there to be disfellowship, like it was here. And yet you cannot altogether avoid contact with the sexually immoral of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or idolaters, for since then, you have to go out of the world. So that creates some circumstances, doesn't it? Now, let's ask some questions, and let's see why Christ did this in Mark the 2nd chapter to give us the permission to do it. Now, I do a lot of traveling, and wherever I go, and flying on the plane, sometimes I fly on the Sabbath to get there. I used to have to fly every Sabbath between Salt Lake and Boise for 7 years. There wouldn't been any services unless I did so. Now, think about that. Which is the highest priority? Traveling? So that you shouldn't travel? No, traveling is necessary to serve the highest priority of feeding the flock and assembling together. Now, when I drive up north to Fairfield, I have to go through a toll bridge and it costs me $3 every time. And if I don't pay the $3, I don't go through. And in going through there and paying the $3, technically speaking, I'm hiring this godless, Sabbath-profaning person who collects my filthy, rotten federal money. You see, you can get all these things exaggerated, right? Because I'm hiring that person so I can pass through. And if I don't give that person the $3, now, granted, I'm not hiring her, technically. The state has her there, or has him there, right? Yes, but nevertheless, I'm participating in them profaning the Sabbath, according to the reasoning of some of these people here, see? Okay? Now, let me tell you about the... And this happens wherever I travel. You have to rent a hall. Now, when you rent a hall, what happens? You pay for it. Even if you pay for it in advance, you're what? You're paying for the person to be there to open it up for you so you can keep Sabbath services, right? So you're hiring that person to work on the Sabbath to open the building and to be there while you are there. Is that not correct? Yes. So you are hiring a non-believer to do something for you. Is that not correct? Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, let's take, for example, and I know this. Everywhere I travel, we meet in some kind of hired hall, and we have a meal. And the church pays for the meal. Why? Because brethren come from 200 and sometimes 300 miles to fellowship and be together when I travel. And God blesses those meetings, without a doubt. And when I go there, what do I have to do? I have to have a room. And I hire the hotel for the room. Don't I? Yes. Now, I may pay for it with a credit card, but nevertheless, it's still hiring them. Same way, you go to the feast. What do? You pay for 8 days. But you are paying for both holy days. Is that not correct? Yes. And when you get up in the morning and go to services, guess what happens? The maid comes in and straightens up your room. Is that not correct? Where you have a room that way? Yes. So, technically speaking, in order to keep the feast, you're hiring these godless, profaning people to serve you so you can go to the feast. Now, let's use the example of the recent elders' conference. Now, all the elders came. Now, if it were wrong for us to do the things that we did and hire the hotel to do the things that they provided, then God surely would have not inspired anything that went on there. But you can ask anyone who was there, any elder who was there, it was one of the most inspiring and uplifting and most moving Sabbaths that we have experienced in a long time. And that's the sermon that I did on your relationship with God. Now, let's look at the circumstances involved. We all got there, husbands and wives, on Thursday. And the church paid for the room Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And the maids came in and did their thing every day. We'd get up in the morning, we would go down, and we would have breakfast down in the restaurant. And on the Sabbath, we went down and had breakfast down there and signed a little slip so it was charged to our room. We rented the hall. And the hall, to hold 100 brethren, cost $600. They had attendants, they had clerks, they had everything there. And so, if we weren't there, someone else would have been there, correct? Yes, indeed, because we had to make our reservations way ahead of time. But nevertheless, we are causing those people to work on our behalf on the Sabbath so we can keep the Sabbath. Now then, between services, we had a wonderful meal. And all of the brethren went down and we had a nice warm meal. Everyone was fellowshipping, rejoicing. It was a wonderful time. Now, if you were a curmudgeon and didn't believe in eating a meal out, why would you even come there to a rented hall to be there for Sabbath services and then go out in your car and eat a packed lunch that you brought with you because you didn't want to eat a lunch that was paid for by the church for all the brethren who were traveling, and some of them as much as 300 miles, some even more? Now, you need to think about that. God blessed that. What was the fruit of that? That was well blessed. Because there was a reason, there was a need, it was on the Sabbath day, it was serving the brethren, it was worshiping God, it was fellowshipping with Him, and it was very evident the power of God's Spirit in that room was so intense that it was, several commented that the brethren were just so intent on listening and hearing and feeling and seeing, reading the Scriptures, the wonderful blessing of our relationship with God and fellowshipping with Him, that it was there. You could even hear a pin drop if it would have dropped. So by that fruit, we see that God was there. He blessed the entire event. He blessed the entire day. He blessed everything that was done. And yes, we hired them to service on the Sabbath day. Now, again, as I have said, if you're at home and no one is traveling, you don't need to go out on the Sabbath. So the answer, should we eat on the Sabbath or not, is no and yes, depending upon the circumstances and depending upon the amount of travel that you're going to do. Now, can that be abused? Of course it can be abused. But I tell you what, if we didn't have the cars to travel and the planes to travel and the means to eat out like we have today, do you think that we could serve the brethren and do the things that we are doing? Do you think that the brethren could be able to come in and enjoy a Sabbath? How about this? You rent a room, but you tell the hotel, well, now we're all going to bring our own sack lunch, and say, no, you can't do it. You either eat the food here or you don't eat in here. Okay, so at lunchtime, all right, brethren, since we're not to buy any food, everybody get out, everybody go to your car, everybody just sit there by yourselves and munch on your sandwiches that you brought. No. That is an improper judgment. God does not want that. He wants us to fellowship together, enjoy the food together, and because of the circumstances, God says it is allowable through the example of Mark, the second chapter. God says it's allowable through the example of 1 Corinthians 8 and the thing of eating things sacrificed to idols. So we need to understand that. We need to realize that. Now, I don't know the circumstances with all of these who have written these things, but I can tell you this. Number one, they don't do any traveling to go out and serve brethren. Number two, it is mostly that they drive just a little ways, and so there's no need for them to eat out. But when you're dealing in situations like I deal with all the time, and many brethren deal with all the time, and who are alone keeping the Sabbath at home and not eating out most of the time, when they have an opportunity to travel 2 or 3 hours, which then entails hundreds of miles of driving, they're very happy to come so they can fellowship. They want to see brethren. They want to be together. They want to visit. They want to commune with each other. And if we have a meal provided where they can do that, God blesses that activity. And that is a right and proper activity living in the age that we are living in. Now, granted, we're not going to do that when the kingdom of God is on earth, because there are going to be churches everywhere. You'll just be able to walk down to the corner and there's a church. And the church will be the school. Going to be totally different. So the circumstances down through history are different. And living in the age that we live in, we have most things all ready for us. So it's not wrong to turn on the thermostat to warm your house on the Sabbath. It's not wrong to heat some food on the Sabbath that you have and eat it. It's not wrong to drive your car, though you have to turn on the ignition, and that starts the flame burning in the cylinders of your car so you can drive. It is not wrong when you're driving distances and things like this to eat out on the Sabbath because you have need. Again, don't abuse it. But in those situations where it's necessary, now I'm going down to Monrovia. I go down there 4 to 6 times a year. When we get down there, we meet at the Sheraton Four Points Hotel. Some brethren come in and stay. Others drive. Some of them drive as much as 200 miles to get there. And a lot of it is driving on freeways, which is pretty hectic driving. Now, how would it be if we said, okay, brethren, everyone come, but you bring your lunch, and when it comes time for lunch, you go out in your car and you eat your lunch, because they won't let us bring it in here to the hotel and eat. See, there has to be proper understanding and balance and judgment in these things. And you cannot have an absolute prohibition against using people who are unconverted to help you on the Sabbath. Nearly everything that you do depends upon some unconverted person somewhere. So you think about that. Yes, it is permissible to eat out on the Sabbath given those circumstances. And when we see the fruit of it, when we see how God blesses us, not only with love and peace, but also with understanding, but also in learning more from His Scriptures, that God puts His presence there, that He is fellowshipping with us while we are there in a hired hall with hired people to watch over the hall, with a hired meal, with people to serve it, and He blesses it. And He's fellowshipping with His people, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, but that is absolutely correct and right to do in the day that we are living. And know this, the day is going to come when we won't be able to because of all the circumstances that are coming upon us. So we can still keep the Sabbath holy and worship God, study His Word, love God, and love each other, and still eat out on the Sabbath in the circumstances I have described. The overseas offices are Canada, Post Office Box 125, Brockville, Ontario, Postal Code K6V5V2. For Australia, Biblical Truth Ministries, GPO Box 1574, Sydney 2001. New Zealand, Post Office Box 242, Waihi, Waihi 2981. Republic of South Africa, Post Office Box 2624, Wilrow, Wilro, Park, Postal Code 1731. United Kingdom, Post Office Box 8224, Witham, Postal Code CM81WZ, United Kingdom.